We remove them to Oklahoma. Time passes. The states are swallowing around the Indian territory. Well, we have all these Indians on this fertile ground. They've now made it fertile. But they're holding it as a community. It's held in community. That's the way Indian people did it. It was a community. How can you own Mother Earth? That is a question that people would always say. How can you own the ground, the earth? It's not part of our concept. Well, the pressure became enough that the government had to do something about these Indians because people now want this land. So what we're going to do, and I believe the senator was from Massachusetts. Daniel, correct me if I'm wrong. But if our listeners want to look at this, I want them to take what I say and do research and find out about this because this is our history, our culture. Mr. Dawes decided that what he would do is that he would certify these Indian people as being of Indian blood. So, I have a lot of the testimonies from the cells, from the Berry Hills, all of these Indian people who testified who was Indian. So basically, this was all a testimony. The numbers that were attached, the eighth, the quarter, the half, whatever, was all figured out because of somebody's testimony. In my family, I don't know who taught these people math, but the math is all over the book. I mean, it's wrong. Now,
maybe they were trying not to be too Indian to now, protect themselves.
This is a crucial point. Thank you, Danielle, because that's my next point. When I brought this up to Creek Nation, I said, this is all wrong. And they said, Bruce, it's all wrong. Because in those days, if you were too much Indian, you had your children taken to Indian school. You lost, but if you were enough white, you had a different set of rules. You see why this blood quantum is baloney.
So suddenly on the books, you had to be either above or below like 9/16 or 5/16 or whatever the crazy math was.
That's right.
And so suddenly, straight down the ledger book, you see all kinds of those numbers, 5/16, 5/16, 5/16.
Eighth is a big one.
Yeah, eighth, because it allowed you to keep your children at home.
And your rights.
And your rights.
And we should also say the Dawes Act was used to force allotment of land and break up the reservations.
Now, when I said earlier, you may have heard me say earlier that my grandfather was an allottee. He was very young, but he had an allotment. We have these Indians on this ground, and this ground they're not doing anything with it. It's going to waste was the word. So what?
Well, that's the white perspective.
That's the white perspective. To the Indian perspective, it was communally held. So what the government decided to do by the Dawes is that each person who was qualified on the Dawes rolls was given 160 acres. Now, a lot of the purebloods would not go into, and they were squeezed out. They were not put on the Dawes rolls. Even though they're pure Indian, so this thing is a sham.
Which impacts people even to this day.
To this day. So now you have each one of these Indians who are listed on the Dawes rolls given 160 acres, and that's what I mentioned earlier about my father was born on my grandfather's land. It was part of the Dawes rolls. Allotment. My grandfather was an allotment, and I have that information.
And I think our listeners would also like to know that the land that was left over after all of the people who were put on the roll, and those 160 acres were doled out to all eligible members who were only on the roll, whatever the surplus that was left over.
It was called surplus.
And it was opened up for auction. Wasn't that correct?
What they decided to do was that the land that was not doled out to the Indian people was declared surplus land, and they had the Oklahoma land rush. People rushed into this surplus land.
The sinners.
That's right. Rushed into this land, rushed into this ground, and this is mine. I'm taking it. But it wasn't theirs to take, reality. It was Indian land. Just as the land was stolen in the east, now it's stolen again.
So it happened a second time.
It happened a second time to these people. Now, remember, these people are not used to living in the modern world, at the modern world at that time. Many of them lost their land through taxes. That's how we lost our land. We couldn't pay the taxes. We lost it during the great Dust Bowl. Nobody could make a living. So that's when we lost our land.
It's ironic that you grew up in Southern California, because that is where many people were relocated through government programs about this time, dealing with the Dust Bowl. Indian people from Oklahoma
moved to
California in an urbanization effort, and trying to get them work and employment in other places. And California was one of those places where they went.
And my father,
especially Bakersfield area.
I didn't understand this until the researcher from Creek Nation put this together for me. My father, he didn't go to California just because it was a nice place on the map. He went there because Indian people were being relocated there. Now I want to speak just a little bit about urbanization, because it was one of the ways that the government was going to try to nullify the reservation system
and assimilate everybody.
It was assimilation, I believe, Danielle, is what it was called. These Indian people were enticed to leave the reservation, because if they left the reservation, then we don't have to support the reservation. Now you understand, the reservation, the Creek Reservation, is a federally recognized by treaty. I'm saying that very carefully because I want you to understand. Our land was deeded to us for as long as the rivers flow and the grass grows. This land is Creek land.
And that's in the treaty.
That's in the treaty.
Language.
That's the language. If we can get them to leave it, then we don't have to support it anymore. You see, it was devious. It was, you know, and part of the shame that these Indian people went through, I think it was maybe not created by the government, but I certainly believe that they did a lot to foster it. That's exactly correct.
And that gets us to your dad then being in California.
Exactly correct.
And then 35 years or so later,
I hear the story.
Getting the story.
You see, I mean, it's a very interesting. All of this I knew about growing up, but I didn't know what it meant.
But I would say, Bruce, in your own personal history that you've shared with us, it is a mirror of what happened to so many people.
I'm one.
So while you're sharing one particular story, it's a mirror of what happened to many people.
My purpose in coming here and doing this interview was not just to tell my story, but was to tell my story to people who have similar stories, who will take what I say and maybe think about helping them find their path.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's an interesting story. I just happen to have done a lot of research and was fortunate enough to have all of this material in the National Archives in Texas. So anybody that's doing the research for the Five Civilized Tribes, not in D.C., it's in Texas.
One last question before we end. Here you are. You've got all this information, and now you live in Richmond, Virginia. How do you place yourself? Where's Indian country anymore? We hear Indian country was Oklahoma at one point, pre-Columbus. It's the whole
Eastern
hemisphere. Where is it today? What's it like to be a Creek person in Richmond, Virginia?
And that is probably one of the most poignant questions you could ask me. And one of my fulfillments to my father is to do programs that in some way enrich our culture and connect our people to who they are. I've seen it work in the general population. I know how powerful these programs are. I know how powerful this is. This is medicine. This is big medicine. I have seen it. I mentioned I saw it in a vision quest. I didn't know what the power was. I had all this information. It was unconnected. The vision quest. When I saw it all laid out to me. Now, do I know why I'm here? I don't know. I think I was, you know, we're all led to places. I've been brought here. Do I know what the future is? No. I'll just live it. I'll have a great time doing it. And hopefully, I'll be able to fulfill that honor and pledge to my father that when he died, just less than, I think just a little bit more, just right a month ago, my pledge to him was to reconnect our family to our culture. And the way I can do it is what I do best, television. Yeah, that's power. That's big magic. That's modern magic. That's taking our people's ancient way of communicating through song, dance, music, and storytelling. Taking all of those and not refiguring it, but just bringing it to the public, because I know the public loves it. I know that our native people need it. The program I just finished on Culture and Pride, I can't tell you how many copies we've made of that. People crying, telling me, I can't believe I saw my grandfather in this. It's just, it connects people up. And that's the beauty of this kind of work, is that it connects people. If I don't make a dime doing it, what will come back to me, you can't buy. You can't buy it.
Bruce, I want to thank you for being with us today and sharing your story with us.
Creek Nation, east of the Mississippi to west of the Mississippi.
Thank you, brother.
All right.